Yes, it is Tuesday, April 23. This is the Big Sports Breakfast on Sky Sports Radio, Radio Tab. A very good morning to you wherever and however you are listening. If you are just tuning in, yes, Mossy's here on the text line. Loz, how does your blue Stratos aftershave compare sitting next to Mossy? Ask Neville.
Not as good as Mossy's, but the blue Stratos was very good. Brute was always good too.
Oh, Brute, yeah.
Yeah, Brute. You would have been a Brute man, Mossy,
I was brought
you?
Up on that, my uncle. Yeah. My late uncle used to be a Brute man.
Yeah, what's your go-to now? I know what you're wearing. You told me earlier this morning, but what is your go-to?
Probably Chanel Blue.
Chanel
Blue.
Blue.
Sounds expensive.
Yeah. Mm.
I wouldn't know.
Oh, only the best for Mossy.
I wouldn't know. My wife buys it. But I have to say, it's hard to smell Loz in the mornings. I know we sit in the studio together, but in the breaks, he ducks and weaves through the desks and can't keep up with him.
I drink plenty of water.
Yeah.
I do drink plenty of water. So... That's what happens, Mossy, when you drink water.
By the way, Wisehow says, Lozza amoral to get a role somewhere in the Winx movie, even playing Chris Waller. How is your acting going these days? I mean, you've been
part of
various campaigns. There was the plane in Canberra.
Plane in Canberra. That, I've got one coming up next week, actually.
Is that right?
Released later in the year.
Okay. Can you give us a tease?
Possibly, well, tease. Clothing.
You can't see this on air, but the way Loz just moved his eyes and pouted his lips when he said that. I can't unsee that.
I'm glad we don't have the camera anymore.
Remember those days?
That camera there.
Especially early in the morning, like you're just not with it.
No.
You know, and you forget the camera's actually...
Oh, no.
Yeah, get yourself into some trouble.
Most definitely.
Here we go. While we had pearls of wisdom from Jared Daffy earlier, here's one for you, Loz, from Mitch and Robertson.
Yeah.
Loz, why can you call Wagga Wagga just Wagga, but you can't call Woi Woi just Woi?
I don't know.
It's a very good question.
That's a very good question. It just doesn't have the same... tone to it, has it? Woi to Wagga.
Yeah.
Like when you go to Wagga, you know where you're going. But Woi, now you got to use Woi Woi. I don't know why.
Sounds like he can't get his ass out.
But you got to go Woi. You got to go Woi.
I'll tell you what you don't
Woi,
do.
Woi Woi.
You don't drive over.
You got to double up.
You do. Well,
You
maybe because it's only one syllable.
Oh, we're getting into the English lessons here, are we?
I can only imagine what Denny Wilder's thinking as he waits to talk to us.
I don't know. Why?
Well, this does go through my mind. Penny and I bought an investment property in Wagga. Wagga.
Mm-hmm. Gee, but you don't. I don't say Wagga Wagga. I say I'm going to Wagga.
Yeah, I'm going to Wagga.
Yeah.
So that's how I say it as well. But then you get some certain letters that say Wagga Wagga. You get others that say Riverina Council. They always rip you off. I'm always forking out for them. But good place. Beautiful.
Lovely place. We're down there a
couple of weeks.
When? Next week?
Next week.
The Wagga Cup?
Gosh.
The Wagga Cup's on my bucket list. I want to go to the Wagga Cup.
It is sensational. Try walking out of the Wagga Cup with old mate over here. Remember me, Laurie? Remember me? I've never seen anything like it. Unbelievable. Hello, Denny. How are you?
That was a beautiful setup, Mido.
Yeah, I tried. I tried and failed, which is my fault. All right, let's now have a listen, actually, to you speaking to Nathan Cleary.
Do you think you're playing this week?
Well, that's the plan. I don't want to 100% commit to that. I still got a few final boxes to tick, but it's coming along nicely.
Did you have a setback with it? I mean, there was reports that you might have gone too hard or you might have had something go on.
No, it was just probably just the healing process took a little bit longer than I originally thought.
Michael Maguire has been in touch.
Madge, what did he say to you?
No, I've just been talking about, what he wants and what his sort of vision is for the team going forward. And
did he ask what you want?
No, not so much me. He's just sort of saying like what he wants and what his vision is.
Well, there you go, Denny. That's you speaking with Nathan Cleary. What else came out of it?
The old footy show days where Danny would be sitting there thrown to a package or something. It just wouldn't happen. Look, Nathan was actually, he's become the face of Rexona. He's just signed a really big money deal, and we were there when he was filming an ad, and it's just part of the expanding superstar that he is. And yeah, the hammy is the big issue with him, but the other thing is the way that the team has sort of taken the James Fisher-Harris news, and I put it to him that is this, you know, how many more blows like this can Penrith take? Because, I mean, we've seen some massive ones in recent times, obviously the Burtons, the Crichtons, the kickouts, and Coruscant. Every time it happens, you think that, you know, Penrith aren't going to be able to return from where they're at. But, you know, this one, Fisher-Harris is their forward leader. It came a little bit sort of out of the blue, didn't it? And Nathan is convinced that he wouldn't tell me the players that they've got in their system who are going to be coming up through the ranks and can, you know, eventually take something of the place of Fisher-Harris. They'll never probably fill his shoes properly. But he's confident that within their ranks, there are some very, very promising front rowers. And also, I guess that means that they don't have to chase a Stefano as hard as, you know, many people think they might have to. But he's convinced they're not going to crumble. But, Loz, you've been part of a dynasty and a team that has superstars. I don't remember you guys losing as many players and having to cope with that, like Penrith are.
Yeah, we did. We lost, I think it was the end of 91. So we lost Lazarus, Todd, Barnhill.
Yep.
Gaffey, Wayne Collins. I think there's a Paul Martins. There's a Ivan Hemjacks.
Largely, like, it was you, Sticky, Clyde. You know, you stuck to Walters. He was there. You had that. I know they've lost some. I mean, I know, disrespect to any of the blokes you mentioned, particularly the Glenn Lazarus, but they just keep on taking these massive.
Oh, they do. I totally agree with you there, Denny. I think what they've done has been magnificent, and who's to doubt that they can't replace Fisher-Harris because they've seemed to replace everyone else that's left, and they've done an admirable job. All the players that have stepped up, but it has to take. Has to take its toll at some
when,
point.
It's just like, we keep thinking that. Like I thought when they lost Appy, it would be massive, you know?
Yeah, oh, so did I. So did I.
I thought that's going to really disrupt what they do. But Mitch Kenny's just, he's become a real star of the game, hasn't he? And they've adapted, he's adapted. And what Nathan was talking about was the system they have in place there that allows people to slot in and do that kind of job. And it's so impressive, isn't it? I mean, we look for a lot of negatives in the game, but when you see what Penrith are doing and the way they cope, it can't go on forever. Yeah, I remember your era, and you've got the sense that it would stop eventually. But right now, it's going to take a hell of a good team to beat them.
And Danny, you got some breaking news on Schuster.
Yeah, there's been a lot of talk about what he's. He's going to have a payout from Manly. And the widely sort of reported figure has been around $600,000 for the contract to be terminated and so he can move on. I've been told it's actually closer to $1 million. So Manly going to have to pay him $1 million to leave his deal and move off to another club. And that $1 million will all go in the cap from what I'm told. So it'll be spread over a number of years. I believe that the bulk of it will be in the current deal that he's got, and then it'll be, I think it's been reported, around $200,000 a year for the remaining 3 years. So it's significant. I can't imagine Manly's happy about having to fork out $1 million for largely not getting any return on it. However, in a lot of ways, it shows that, you know, we hear about players all the time, you know, being shipped off by clubs and being cut and not being cared for. So there's a level of care there for Manly, but it's a significant cap, impingement for them, isn't it?
What do you make of the Eels' performance last week and Brad Arthur's comments after the game about a part-time footy team and There's now talks about Brad Arthur's future. People saying, is he the right man to lead them forward? It seems to pop up every year when Parramatta go through a bit of a tough spot.
Well, look, Brad Arthur's got some inbuilt enemies around the place, and I think he knows that, and I think people know what I'm talking about. But the way he reacted shows that he's almost not without ideas, but he's obviously at the end of his rope in a lot of ways, isn't he? Like, he's to say that about his players, he's now put it fairly and squarely back on them. He will be looking for them to lead themselves out of this mess they're in at the moment, and I think he's made that pretty clear to them. There was a meeting, I believe, yesterday or in the last 48 hours, where a lot of this was discussed. From what I've been told, the players, it was put a lot onto the players to lead that discussion, and it's quite significant, Laurie, that today Parramatta have a media opportunity, and they're putting their leadership group up to answer the questions. So I expect some good answers from the players today. I'm going to go out there, and I'm going to find out exactly how they're feeling about the situation. And is Brad under pressure? For sure, yeah. Yeah, no doubt. He's definitely under pressure. There is no question of that. Is it all his fault? No way. Not a chance. But, in these situations, it's always the coach who's in the firing line. And the feeling I get from the Parramatta club, having talked to people around there, is that this is a very, very big week for Brad Arthur. Because he's put it on the players. He's obviously, when a coach does that, I mean, you guys have got more experience with what coaches do than I do, but when a coach does that, it's usually for he's looking for an answer. And if they don't get an answer against Manly, I think it could be some very interesting times there.
Well, it's all or nothing when you put it on the players like that. And it's not so much about the win, it's about the competitive nature of the team. It's about how they fight and scrap and just play for 80 minutes. You want to win, but it's about how they go about performing. And after the week they've had and the challenge that he's put to them, if they don't, well, then you've got to say, well, the message didn't get through.
Yeah, but Laurie, he's looking for a response, isn't he?
Yep, most definitely is.
For a reaction. I mean, have you been in that situation where coaches, not so much throwing the team under the bus, but just put it back onto the team in that way? And I'd like to know whether players feel a responsibility in that situation.
Yeah, I can't remember as a team. I can certainly remember the coach or Tim Sheens pulling me aside and going, mate, we need you. You're gonna lead this week. And your performances haven't been great, and I'm expecting you to produce something this weekend and just compete as hard as you can and try to inspire. So I've had those conversations as an individual, but I can't. And I'm sure it would have happened as a group. But I'm sure he would have picked people out from the group. Yeah.
But this is very public. This is very public, right? So this is basically the coach, Brad Arthur, saying, are you all in with me?
Yeah.
Or are you not?
Yeah. And that's exactly what it is.
It's out there for everyone to see.
Yeah.
And look, they haven't got an easy game. It's Manly, isn't it? From memory.
Yeah, Manly. Away.
And that's... They beat Manly, wasn't it, just a few weeks ago?
Yeah, they did. But their record at Combank compared to away at the moment is just poles apart.
Yeah. And it's going to be tough, but I think it's all about the effort and the performance this weekend. It's all about that grit and competing. The way they capitulated in the second half was unacceptable.
That's unheard of.
Yeah. Well, they were 10-4
eight,
up.
8-4 it was at 8-4, half-time.
8-4 at half-time. So to give away a second half like that is unacceptable, and you need a response. And if anyone's going to bring the best out of them, it will be Manly this weekend. What about Trent Robinson, Denny? And I saw the article in Sunday's paper, and he is one of the genuine good guys of the game. And everyone loves his thoughts on all things rugby league, but they haven't started the year as well as everyone would have thought. I mean, is he under pressure, or what's happening there at the Roosters if they lose this weekend against the Dragons? Like, I know he's bought himself some time, you know, winning three competitions, but a lot of text messages we receive...
Oh, Friday. It's changing, isn't it?
Yeah, well, there's a lot of strong about whether he's the right man.
Yeah, I... Look, first of all, referring to that article I wrote, it was largely around the whole Michael Jennings situation, which is quite an inflammatory topic. And there's no doubt that Trent has been... had distractions over the last few months. He had obviously the Spencer Lenu thing, which was massive. The Michael Jennings thing is a big talking point as well. Joey Manu's decided to leave. Suaalii is going. They've had, you know, concussion stuff. They've had Teddy's form question. And yet there is no question that Trent Robinson is feeling all of that. At his core, Trent Robinson is a very decent human being and a good bloke. There's no question he can
very
coach.
Very much so.
Yeah. Is he under pressure? I think that Nick Politis, who makes, let's face it, he makes a lot of the, I think he makes pretty much all the calls at that club. I know there's a board, but you know, usually what Nick says goes, right? And Nick Politis is firmly in Trent Robinson's corner. And whether or not the entire club is, or everybody around the club is, that may be debatable. But when it comes to the decision maker and the man who basically said that Robinson's got the job for as long as he wants, he's the one making those calls. Politis wants him there. So I also think L'Oreal was very critical of the Roosters last year. And given their roster, and they just really sort of limped into the finals, didn't they? They didn't really ever look like being the team that should win the comp, which is, to me, I know a lot of people say their roster's overrated. I think it's an excellent roster. And it's one that, it's in the top four or five rosters for sure in the comp, if not in the conversation for the best roster in the comp. So they're not getting the results that their roster shows they should be getting. There are circumstances, obviously, and injury and everything else that happens. But is he under pressure? Last time I checked, no, not under pressure. If they miss the finals a couple of years in a row, that's when pressure is, or if and when, I guess, Nick Politis one day decides to step aside, then maybe Robinson loses his greatest ally. But he has won three comps. Let's not forget that. That's three comps. That's a remarkable record. Remarkable. Puts him in the category of, you know, our great coaches. But, you know, there's always people on your text line who want to criticise him, saying that, you know, he's got it all. I understand where they're coming from. I understand that people are frustrated, given the quality of player.
And Danny, I had the pleasure of bumping into Cameron Seraldo between seasons, the end of last season. Had a good chat with him about coaching. He was there was real substance.
You straightened him out, did you, Mossy? You put him on the right track.
Well, mate, do you want me to take some credit?
Yeah, take the credit.
Take the credit, Mossy. Take the credit.
Easy chance.
It doesn't matter what coat it is, what shape the ball is. But he was very impressive to talk to. He had real substance behind what he was saying, and he was convinced that this season would be much, much better. On the rise in his second season, what would you say?
Well, I think you look. I think an indication of where the Bulldogs are at. They're not sort of flying high on the table by any stretch. They probably could have had a win over Melbourne if they were slightly better. And, you know, I get all that, but I think their defence has improved a lot. And if you look at the teams who've played the same number of games as they have, and look at what their points are letting in, it's very competitive. I think it's, you know, there's only one or two teams that might have a a better defensive record if you take into account the number of games they've played. So they say defence is an attitude, and you know, there are a lot of people wanting to rip into Cameron Serraldo for coaching methods and that he's too tough and all that sort of stuff. Remember all that talk? Mm. Where's that talk now? You know, people have stopped saying that because they're starting to... They've got players now in that club who have bought into what Cameron Serraldo requires in terms of resilience and understanding defence. And largely, he's a coach who has made his name on good defensive systems. And I mean, I'm not the X's and O's guy. I don't pretend to have the expertise of a Laurie or people who played the game. But just looking at it, when you see them play, I mean, Laurie, you see them play with a different attitude, don't you, now?
They're a completely different side to last year, Denny. In fact, I thought this year, if they won 7-8 games, that was a good season for them. I'm thinking they'll probably win more. Yep. And they've improved out of sight every week.
They can score points a bit now too.
Yeah, no, their attack looks fluent, and defensively, they are doing everything a lot quicker. Their contact is a lot better. Their line speed's better. They're hanging in there in games. They've had adversity through the middle. Because I thought they'd be blown apart by teams with big forward packs, but they haven't. You know,
that's the interesting part, isn't it?
Most definitely. And even on the weekend, I thought Newcastle, when Patolo went off early, I just said, oh, they'll get exposed here in the middle, because I thought they were a bit short with the big men. And they had
Newcastle got a good pack.
Yeah, they have. And they had, like, Haywood on. They had Moran on and Reid Marnie all at the same time playing through the middle. And I just thought, oh, geez, that's too small. Newcastle here will just run straight through them. But they were hungry, they were competitive, and they were playing well above their weight and just putting their body on the line and competing. And as a coach, you'd be proud of that.
Whether that can last a whole season, because you can give away size and muscle for periods of time and you can be up for it, but there probably are going to be some spots in the season where that impacts them.
That's
going to be the key to how their season is judged, I guess, is whether they can ride through those instances where they are well down on strength. But I think they're punching above their weight. I think that they're bad for signing utility players, but they're finding their feet. I mean, look, Drew Hutchison is not going to play halfback at every club in Sydney, is he? But he's doing a good job for Canterbury. And whether he does that job all season, I'm not sure. He's not really playing like a traditional halfback, because he's probably not. I feel like he's still doing a job for them. And then they bring on, a Blake Taff at points as well, who can do things. And I think the player who stood out to me at the Dogs is Kurt Mann. And he's injured at the moment, but he plays like almost like their halfback in a lot of ways when he plays on the field. And he's out and Preston's out. And look, I think that they are showing some good signs. And I'm not saying they're going to be world beaters, but they've definitely displayed an attitude that I think there are at least another half a dozen clubs in the game who would like to have that attitude going at their club right now.
Thank you, Denny.
Appreciate it.
Welcome back to the Big Sports Breakfast. Now, still to come on the show this morning, we're going to speak to Brisbane Lions assistant coach Daniel Lloyd, who, of course, retired just last year after his playing career at the Giants, where he played 101 games, and straight into coaching on Chris Fagan's staff. So Daniel Lloyd coming up shortly, and, of course, on Anzac Day in Canberra at Manuka Oval, the Giants facing the Lions. And the Lions, it's been... well, an underpar start to the season by their standards, coming off a loss to Geelong, who remain the only undefeated team in the AFL. And the Lions, incredible to think they went 13-0 at the Gabba last season. They are 0-3 at the Gabba this season after that loss to Geelong in the wet last weekend. And they're 2-4 to start the season. Still only one game out of the eight, but their certainly season... maybe at an early crossroads. They need to start winning. They've got a tough game, and we wait to see what comes out of the tribunal tonight with the Giants set to challenge the one-week suspensions given to Toby Green and Jesse Hogan. Green collecting Carlton's Jordan Boyd in a marking contest there in that match against Carlton last Saturday. Just the NBA yesterday, the playoffs, as they got underway in the last 2 days. The Celtics beat the Miami Heat 114-94. The Clippers, James Harden was superb. And 109-97 against the Dallas Mavericks, who made a very slow start in that game and never really recovered. Neither did the Indiana Pacers. They were blown apart in the first half by the Milwaukee Bucks, and the Bucks at home 109-94, doing it without Giannis. And Damian Lillard was absolutely on fire in the first half. He had 35 points to halftime in that match yesterday. The close game of the opening games of all 8 playoff series was the number one seed in the West, Josh Giddey's Oklahoma City Thunder, just holding on, or just getting ahead of the Pelicans of New Orleans, 94-92. And games starting from 9 a.m. this morning. Cleveland, $1.46 against Orlando, $2.80. The New York Knicks, $1.46 with Tab against Philadelphia, $2.80. Denver, $1.34. The Lakers, $3.40. And the Minnesota Timberwolves, $1.65 against the Phoenix Suns, $2.30. That game is tomorrow. In fact, the other three games are today. Just in the English Championship this morning, in the race for automatic promotion, a thrilling game. I think it was at the Riverside. Yes, Middlesbrough and Leeds. And Leeds United won 4-3 there this morning. So it means that they're with two games left, they're in second position. And in the automatic promotion spot on 90 points, Leicester City, the one-time Premier League champions of, what, a decade ago or so, wasn't it, Mossy? Unbelievable. And here they are now, top of the Championship, though, looking to get back into the Premier League with three games left and 91 points. Ipswich, the other challenger for automatic promotion, 89 points with three matches remaining in third position. And I mentioned them earlier. How about this one, Mossy? Stacey, long-time Tractor Boys supporter, sent this in as we pondered why the Tractor Boys nickname came up. Mido, FYI, a recent nickname for Ipswich Town is the Tractor Boys, which was coined during the club's brief period in the Premier League from 2000-2001 to 2002, when the team regularly competed against more fashionable clubs. The nickname is an example of self-deprecating humour, referring to suffix agricultural heritage, says Stacey, the long-time Tractor Boys supporter. So there you go.
Always good to hear the history, isn't it?
And who would have thought we had a Tractor Boys supporter listening to the show, but every day we are surprised.
Well, we've got, don't forget, Masalawongo, the Socceroos at Ipswich as well. Yeah. So there's probably a few in Australia at the moment.
Lake Macquarie has Wonji Wonji, but we say Wonji, says Hemo from Lake Macquarie in the Wagga Wagga / Woi Woi, and why we say Wagga Wagga, but not just Woi, as we were talking about earlier, the big issues on the show today. Message for Loz is Foxy racing on Saturday at Morfettville in the Queen of the South Stakes to take on my horse, Rebel Rama. Both horses nominated. Cheers, Jason of Manly Vale, long-term listener.
Foxy at this stage, that's the plan. If all things being equal and nothing has gone wrong, so she should be over there this Saturday racing.
Okay. Tomorrow we'll see what she draws, and hopefully you'll be happy with that, because I know you...
Well, I'll be in Adelaide, so I'm making the trip across. That's how confident I am.
Yeah, that is confidence. Yeah. Mm. We'll be at Live Golf on Friday en route. Okay, time to talk
back
some AFL. Yeah, so confident. A huge game at Anzac Day. Not only is the Essendon-Collingwood blockbuster, as always, at the MCG, but at Marnica Oval, it'll be the Giants up against the Brisbane Lions. And interesting occasion for the Lions assistant coach, Daniel Lloyd, because, as I mentioned, he played 101 games for the Giants, retired just last year after the one-point loss to Collingwood in the preliminary final. And he was soon on Chris Fagan's staff there at the Lions and joins us now. Daniel, a very good morning, mate. How are you?
Yeah, very good. Thank you for having me.
No, great to have you on the show. And I guess for yourself, it can't help but being quite surreal preparing to face the Giants this week.
Yeah, it's an interesting dynamic, isn't it? I was, you know, not long ago on their list playing for them, and now I'm up here coaching at the Lions. So, yeah, no, it's an exciting weekend, and looking forward to it.
How's the transition been for you, Daniel, from playing to coaching? Some players, when they want to morph into coaching, take a year off to take a breath. You've gone straight into it. How's that going for you?
Yeah, no, it's going good. It's probably helped me a bit, I guess, retiring from footy and then still being involved. One thing I have learned is you actually have to think a bit as a coach, whereas as a player, you're a bit of a robot and get told what to do all the time. So, no, I'm really loving it. It's a great environment, the Lions, and it's been a good transition into coaching, surrounded by good coaches and good people. So it's been great.
Yeah,
and
Daniel. Oh, sorry.
Just on that, Daniel. Sorry, Loz. How long ago did you realise that you wanted to move into coaching, and did that help your playing as your career sort of wound down?
To be honest, it sort of just happened. It was a You know, there was always a thought in the back of my mind that something that could potentially happen, but it just come about. And I guess I've always had been able to build good relationships with my teammates and young and old, so that's helped me coming into the role, and I'm enjoying it.
Yeah, Daniel, can I ask? Oh, I mean, you transitioned obviously player to coach. Do you think it's easier for a young player starting out as a coach to do it at another club rather than stay at the club he was at?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think if I had to stay in Sydney and coach there, I'd probably have a different feeling about it, because, you know, you're immersed in the program for so long as a player, and then you're all of a sudden on the other side of it, and you'd probably be itching and scratching still wanting to play. So I reckon it's helped being in a different environment. It's also a change up. You spend so long at one club, and that's great, but it's good to also, as a coach, experience a different environment and learn off other people as well.
Coming into the season, though, a lot of expectations with the Brisbane Lions after falling short in the grand final last year. A lot of people are asking, what's going on with the Lions? How have you rated your season so far? What have you been most disappointed in?
Yeah, absolutely. It's been a different start to the year. 2-4 is not an ideal start, but we definitely think that we've sort of found our form again, barring the weekend. The conditions weren't the best for footy, and Geelong were able to play that a bit better. But we feel like we're in a good place in terms of how we're playing. We just need to capitalise on, four quarter performances and start to get the wins. But yeah, we feel like we're in a good spot, and it's a long year, still 17 games to go, so we feel like we're on the right track.
And Daniel, Toby Green and Jesse Hogan may miss the game. What are you anticipating from the tribunal hearing today?
Yeah, it's an interesting one. Obviously, they're two very important players for them, and they're obviously fighting their cases at the tribunal. But yeah, it's hard to predict any outcome there. But we'll just prepare as normal, and if they play, they play. If they don't, they don't. But they're obviously really important players for them, and we'll prepare as if they're playing, and if they don't, then they don't.
Can I ask, Daniel, as a coaching group, what are you instructing your players to do in that situation that happened on the weekend, where one guy's going back to the ball in a marking contest, the other bloke's going forward, and then all of a sudden realises he can't get there and braces himself? And I've been reading a bit of commentary around some coaches saying, well, what are we supposed to tell our players? What do you guys tell your players at the Lions?
Yeah, it's a hard one, isn't it? Because, the game's played so quickly and you put in all these positions all the time, and, you play the ball and you protect yourself at the same time, but it's a fine line. Those ones are hard to tell what to do and what not to do. And, if you leave the ground, you're sort of at the mercy of what the contest happens. But it's a hard one. It's such a quick moment in a game, and it all happens so fast. It's hard to it's hard for me to have a comment on it, because I've surely been in those positions playing, and each player's going for the ball and they want to protect themselves, and sometimes one comes off, not in the best shape. But yeah, it's a hard one. I've got no real opinion on it, to be honest.
We've got a text here from a Lions fan, I'm sure, Daniel, asking how we're going to get Charlie Cameron good ball. He gets nowhere near enough of it in your front half. What's your response to that?
Well, it's a good question. It's a, you know, you want him getting the footy around goals because he's so dangerous. And as we've seen against Melbourne, he had one of his better games for the year, and he helps us win and helps us play well. So yeah, Charlie's been, you know, he's been working hard. It'll turn for him. He's, you know, the game on the weekend's probably an outlier. It's not a small forward game, wet weather footy, slippery and straight line footy. So he'll get back to his best, and you know, it's not by lack of effort. It'll turn for him, and I'm sure he'll be at his best this weekend.
What about working under Chris Fagan, Daniel? What are some of the things you picked up early in your coaching career under an experienced coach like Chris?
Yeah, mate, it's good to come in and just see how he goes about it, and along with the other assistant coaches as well. And he's you know, he's got great relationships with all his players and his coaches. And you know, from what I've gathered coming into the building, not knowing anything about the place, is it's a great environment to work and to go into every day. And that's, you know, that's a job as a head coach, is to create a good environment for the players to come in with lots of energy. And he does that. And he's, yeah, like I said, he's got great relationships. He's a you know, he's a really good person, and I feel like he's a really good coach as well. So it's been good. It's been really good.
And no doubt just special for everyone to have the opportunity to play on Anzac Day.
Yeah, absolutely. It's such a special day. And, you know, I've been lucky enough to play in a few of these games. And, you know, it has a special place in your heart, and you want to, you know, go out there and do your best for the occasion. So, yeah, it definitely, you know, we'll speak about it during the weekend. You know, it's such a special occasion, and I'm sure the players will be looking forward to getting out there.
Have the other coaches lent on you for what the Giants did last year? Because the Giants were in a similar position to what the Lions were this year, because they started slow and then built a bit of momentum. And how did you go about turning that around last year? And have they lent on you for advice this year for how possibly the Lions may handle it?
Yeah, it's absolutely. We were in the, you know, as a Giant last year, we were in a very similar position. We weren't winning a lot of games early in the year, and but we were in the game, so I feel like it's a similar, you know, situation here at the Lions. You just got to believe in the way you play, believe in the system, and not listen too much to what's going on outside the four walls. And that's what we did at the Giants last year, and we were able to turn it. And, you know, we went on a 7-game winning streak, which is a bit out of the ordinary. But it's, you know, you just got to have a bit of belief in the system. Don't listen too much to what's going on outside, and just, you know, play the game our way. So that's just something we've had a brief chat about. But there's belief in the group. There's no one's listening to what's going on outside. So we're just playing our way, and yeah, week by week, such a cliche, but that's where it is for us at the moment. Not looking too far ahead and just focusing on this week.
Well, Daniel, promises to be a great occasion at Marnica on Thursday night. Enjoy and appreciate your time this morning.
No worries. Thanks for having me.
Great stuff. Daniel Lloyd now, Brisbane Lions assistant, former Giant, of course, as a player, and will stay with us. Brad Davidson's next, but after the 8 o'clock news, Loz, one of the greats is going to join us, the great Kevin Sheedy.
Looking forward to talking all things footy with Sheeds. What a career he's had.
He came up with the concept of the Anzac Day game between Collingwood and Essendon.
So he came up with that concept, plus the Dreamtime game as well.
Yep.
Yeah, right.
Yep. So we'll ask him about that, amongst other
things.
The
inaugural coach of the Giants?
Yes.
Yeah. Yep. Coached, Essendon for such a long period, didn't he?
81 to 07. What a career.
Legend.
Brad Davidson, good morning.
Morning, Jared. Morning, everyone. How are we, guys?
Yeah, really well, thank you. And now, I've just seen this morning on social media that Pride of Jenny's owners had a bit of a crack at J-Mac, James McDonald. Tell us about this.
Yeah, he has. It's created a bit of a storm on social media yesterday, and no doubt will only add to the rematch come the springtime. So Pride of Jenny's owner, Tony Otterbrace, basically, there was a little photo there on social media with J-Mac saying, bring it on, a rematch between Via Sestina and Pride of Jenny in the spring, and yeah, Tony sort of had a few words to say from that, basically saying, you know, J-Mac was beaten by an Irish jumps jockey who's probably not was underselling Declan Bates a bit there, but basically saying, you know, you didn't take any chances. I hope you have a crack next time, and a few other choice words in there. So yeah, it's for anyone on social media, go check it out. But no doubt we'll add to the theatre and rivalry come the rematch in the spring.
Oh, I love that. I don't think we see enough of it.
Not much in
racing seems different. Yeah. It doesn't seem like other sports, whereas that real rivalry and people have a crack at each other. I actually like it. I think it's good for the sport. I'll tell you what though, I think I'd rather be on. Well, I'll ask you. You're the expert, Dave. If they both lined up again, who are you jumping on the back of?
Pierre Sestina.
Yeah, I was about to say the same.
Yeah,
yeah. I just think that, you know, the other day it was. They're not gonna let that happen again. And particularly J-Mac's gonna have a little. He might cut that out and post it on the wall and keep remembering himself every time coming towards spring. But yeah, I agree with you, Loz. I think it's good to have a bit of banter and a bit of rivalry. I think that the racing jurisdiction should really talk up the rematch. You know, it adds a bit of spice
to
definitely. It. As long as it's done in a respectful way and whatever, then you know we've got it. We need more rivalries in the great game of horse racing.
Dave O, Magic Time claims a brave all age stakes win. Where to now?
Yeah, certainly did, Mossy. Probably a little bit of a rest after that. It was a testing track by the time they got to the all age there on Saturday. But look, she was terrific. She's done a great job, hasn't she? To win a few Group 1s in her career already now. And, of course, broadsiding took out the champagne. Manoa didn't seem to handle the conditions, but it was a great win by broadsiding coming from the tail, albeit finding the right part of the track. And hitting the line beautifully to hold off linebacker late. They gapped third. So the two Group 1s to end the autumn, both deserving winners there on Saturday.
And what were your thoughts on... we got through the Group 1s... It was heavy, wasn't it? Just deteriorated. Rain on race day is never great for the track.
No, exactly right. And you know, I know a few people were criticising the track. And, look, it's always rain on race day is tricky. I think probably the more disappointing part was the way the track played. It was, you know, a massive bias towards horses that found the fence during the run before the straight. So, basically, if you found the fence in the run, I think it was worth 3 or 4 lengths, personally. And This is a point I'd like to bring up is I think the awareness of it on race day is something that jockeys and stables need to improve a bit on. Look, I'd be surprised, but, you know, we were talking about this bias from basically after race number one when the first 5 horses in race one found the fence and just scooted along. You could tell that the bias was pretty much there from really early on. But it seems like it's something that a lot of jockeys pick up on far too late, and a lot of stables, I would say, the same. Like, this should be, you know, it was obvious for everyone after 2 or 3 races. Punters are talking about it on social media. We were talking about it on Sky One. Yet, they're seeing jockeys and stables that were oblivious to it most of the day. And, you know, when you're talking about hundreds of thousands and millions of dollars up for grabs, I mean, any jockey really should be watching the race, every race, and working out, okay, is there a bias today? And so should the stables, because really, if I had a horse there on that Group 1 race day on Saturday, the only thing that I'd be wanting my trainer to tell the jockey pre-race there on Saturday is whatever you do, your number one goal is to safely find the fence, because it was worth 3-4 lengths. And it's amazing to see some, like Nash, you know, J-Mac, they knew the bias, but there were a lot of other jockeys there on Saturday who were completely oblivious to it, and that's partly their fault, but partly probably the stables as well not telling them that before the race. So I just think it's something that awareness-wise, that gee, we can get a lot better in this game, because it seems like the best know it, but it seems like there's a big gap, and a lot of others just have no idea that there's actually a bias on the day.
Well, I saw Nash interviewed after it might have been. Wethor, when he won, and Corey asked him about coming up the inside, and he said,
I watched the early races or something like that. He said, I knew where I needed to be.
Yeah, and Nash is one of the best at it. Yeah, he gets it, and that's why he rides Canterbury so well, because Canterbury's been better lately, but there was a period there for 2 or 3 years where it was the same bias where you need to be on the fence, and Nash just knew that and cottoned on before others. And you could see even J-Mac in the Champagne Stakes. He took the position behind the outsider in the field on the fence last. And, in a normal race, that would be an absolute no-no. You just would not do that, because you get caught behind the what the market's saying is the slowest horse in the field. You just never do that as a Group 1 jockey. But J-Mac knew that you had to find the fence. So, it was actually a good ride, because he went and found the right part of the track and then got off at the right time and that. So, like when there's a bias like that, it's almost like the inside's probably like maybe a soft six, and only where off the fence is a heavy 10. So, getting on that fence and riding that position for this maybe 600-800 metres down the back straight is, massively advantageous.
Briefly, who are we following and forgiving?
Well, like I said, because of that bias, you basically there's a few horses to follow, and they're mainly all off that offence on the weekend. Tannhauser was one. I think he wins the Frank Packer Plate quite comfortably on a fair track. He just couldn't find that fence. J-Mac went back in the field trying to look for it, but couldn't get there, and he had to circle the field as a result, and no horse could do that on the day and win. He's a shocker, Ditto, in the 2,000-metre race. He was outstanding off the fence, and I thought Valana was terrific as well, considering he was off the fence and ran really well first up on what was a very testing track. So there's three horses to follow. As for the forgive file, basically any horse that wasn't on the fence, Raffle pulled up lame, Cinnawan and Airman pulled up lame, and Saturday Chicken pulled up with Cardiac Arrhythmia. So a few excuses there on the weekend, but My advice would be just be a little bit careful about backing horses that were super impressive that found the right part of the track there on Saturday as well going forward.
Thank you, Brad. Have a great day.
Thanks, guys. Chat tomorrow.